We each sit before an empty plate in the circle Ma has arranged in the middle of the floor. Nobody asks what we are having to eat. "Here it is," Ma sings and pulls a dish from the fire with heavy pads. "A pie for my lovelies." "Pie?" Joanna says and licks her lips. "Yes," Ma sets the dish down before us. She kneels before it, knife in hand, and I find myself anxious at the sight. "Dried apple pie." Apple. I know for a fact that Pa didn't get any dried apples on his last supply purchase, and the smell in the air is that of anything but fruit. Emily bites her lower lip and studies the pie. It's a pie. There's no denying it. Covered in a vented layer of cornmeal dough that is slightly burnt around the edges, Ma shoves the tip of the knife into the pie and begins to saw away. "First piece for the baby," she says and grabs Charles's plate. She plops a huge piece onto it, then slides it back in front of him. The pie is filled with something lumpy and gray. The gravy runs clear in places and cloudy in others. The smell makes my stomach turn as easily as if I'm still with child. "Eat up, my littlest," Ma encourages Charles. Emily and I look at each other in wonder. Ma finishes filling the rest of our plates with the steaming pie. "Why is nobody eating?" Ma asks when she notices our stares. Her enthusiasm dies, and her dark eyebrows pull together in the center. "Eat it. Now." "Are you..." I clear my throat, afraid to set her off. "Are you sure this is apple, Ma?"
"You ungrateful bitch!" Ma snaps in my face, knife still in hand, and the children's eyes widen in horror. She points the knife toward my face. "Now I really must insist that you try it. You'll never know if you like it unless..."
My heart is pounding in my throat. The knife is still pointed to me. I take my fork with a shaking hand and gather a bite of the stinking pie. A large, dark, slimy thing falls from the fork and lands on the plate, and I study it in disgusted curiosity.
"That's probably the liver," Ma says, "or the heart. You really don't want to miss either of them, regardless. Eat it, lovey."
Charles begins to hum "Come, Holy Ghost," and Joanna joins in almost instantly. No matter how subtle the song choice, the timing is terrible. Ma's eyes flash to the children, narrowed with confusion.
"It's singing time now, is it?" she asks. "Well, I can see that nobody is hungry."
She makes a quick movement for me all of the sudden from across the floor, and for an instant I think she is going to drive the knife right into my eye, or my stomach, or my throat. But instead, the fork in my hand is snatched away. The remaining food on it flies over the floor and Ma's lap.
"Ungrateful children don't get lunch," she says, and spears another rabbit organ from the pie.
She shoves it into her mouth and chews viciously, and I can hear the gristle grinding like sand between her teeth. Fluid dribbles from her smacking lips and down her chin.
"Or dinner, or breakfast. In fact, I think that none of you will ever eat anything, ever again."
I cannot leave them here when I go. I realize she's going to kill us all. Emily stands up and motions for Joe and Charles to do the same. They do and move behind Emily.
"We're going out to play, Ma," Emily says and starts leading them out.
"Wait, you're leaving me," I want to cry out, but my legs won't work and I can't stand up and the children need to be taken away. I understand why Emily is abandoning me, but that does nothing to ease the panic.
"I don't want to see your faces back in this cabin again," Ma yells at them.
Tears well up in Charles's brown eyes.
"You can live outside like the little animals that you are."
They leave, and I'm left sitting on the floor to watch my Ma attempt another bite of the gizzard pie. After three chews, she vomits into the pie dish, filling it back to the brim. I finally find the strength to stand and back away when she starts eating at it just as eagerly as before.
"I'm going to join the children," I say, struggling not to scream, struggling not to run.
She looks up at me through yellowed eyes, and my heart skips a beat.
"It's you," Ma says, as if seeing me for the first time. "The one who wouldn't let me in when I knocked. I didn't think it was possible, but this one had just as much guilt as you did. Delicious."
I take another step back.
"Wouldn't let you in?" I tried and tried, but in the end, there was no room for me. Oh, no.
She stops eating for a moment, tilts her head curiously.
Because you already have a devil in you, girl. I see him whispering in your ear right now.
Sinner. I cannot move. I must get to the door, and I cannot move.
You prayed for those babies to die,
she rasps now, much louder than before, her voice completely changed.
You prayed for those babies to die, and yet you wonder what it is that is wrong with you?
I feel very lightheaded all of a sudden, as if I am going to faint, and the thing that calls itself my ma continues to stuff its face, without a care that the pie is spilling onto the front of the already stained nightdress.
Your little bastard would have been a girl, you know,
it adds through a full mouth.
Dark hair, just like her ma, with the nose of her father. Giggly like Joanna and smart like Emily. And Amanda,
it pauses swiftly to take another bite.
She would have hated your guts.
Her body shudders then, and whatever this creature is, clears my ma's throat and lifts a single eye to stare into my soul.
That wasn't me who collected your baby slime into my earth,
it finishes.
Oh no, dearie, that was God.
I back away another 2 steps and nearly trip over my own feet. Ma grins up at me, her teeth clotted with dark liquid.
You fucked that boy in the mountains,
it says and begins to giggle hysterically.
But there was no baby. There was no baby. There was no.
I turn and sprint from the cabin, and the laugh that chases me out sounds like it is made up of many voices, and I fight with all my might not to faint. After I slam the door behind me, I trip over my own feet and come face down in the grass. I'm convinced that she's going to emerge from the cabin any second, her chin and neck shining with gravy, ready to use the pie pan to crack my head open like a hen's egg. I wait, but the cabin door stays closed. Emily rushes to my side in alarm.
What happened, sister?
She asks and pulls me up.
Are you all right? You're soaked through with sweat. Did she hold the knife to you again?
It all comes together then. Zeke's story of Jasper Kensington murdering his family. A cabin found stinking with blood before it was rebuilt and claimed by our family. Henry telling me about ruined flatlands that could come out to play through the living if it wanted. The one who wouldn't let me in when I knocked, the ma thing said to me just now. You already have a devil in you, girl. The devil in the woods has been here all along. The prairie tried to possess me at first, pulling me in with cries in the dark and an infant standing in the grass, and when it found that my soul was already claimed, it got angry. It came out to play through ma and a swarm of fire ants instead.
We need to leave, I stammer as my body shakes. That man Zeke told us about, Kensington, we're living in his cabin. It's going to happen to ma if we stay. We need to bring the children with us. It's not safe here. We have to get away right this very instant.
I believe you, Emily says. The color in her face has drained.
I really do, Amanda. That wasn't ma in there. Oh, my word, that wasn't ma at all. Zeke said the forest would be safe, like you mentioned. He must have known something. Why didn't he just tell us?
I notice for the first time that Joanna and Charles are staring at me, open-mouthed, from the back of the wagon. Their faces are aghast with fear.
Everything will be all right, I promise them. For what is one more lie after all that I've told? But it's time to go now, children.
They jump down from the wagon and follow us eagerly to where Blackjack is grazing.
Are we going to find Pa now?
Charles whimpers.
Yes,
I say, and the children sigh in relief.
We are.
23.
No matter what happens, Emily tells the children for the 10th time, do not come out of this spot for any reason whatsoever. You wait here until we come and get you. Do you understand?
We are all gathered around an enormous hollowed log whose end is hidden by a large leafy bush. The children are crouched inside, their heads together, their arms wrapped around each other. Both of them have tears in their eyes.
Very well, Joanna whimpers. Just please hurry, sisters.
After putting the children on blackjack and leading the horse to the start of the trees, Emily and I argued about what to do next for minutes, neither of us tearing our eyes away from the cabin in the distance in case Ma started to come after us. When she continued to stay inside, we broke through the barrier and delved deeper into the forest. With no horse, it would take Ma at least an hour to find the spot, if she decided to come looking. We had to act quickly. Emily originally wanted to bring the children with us to Zeke's cabin, but I was insistent about the possibility of there being danger waiting for us. If something happened, and we had to go quickly, we'd be stuck since there is only one horse between the four of us. Even if we all piled on, any speed faster than a walk could send us flying to crack open our heads on the ground below.
"Well, what do we do then?" Emily cried out in frustration. "We certainly can't send them back to the prairie, and I'm not letting you go alone with Blackjack."
After some more deliberation, I had an idea. We could hide the children, go look for Pa, and hopefully bring him back to retrieve Joanna and Charles before heading into Elmwood. If we couldn't find Pa by the time night was falling, we'd take the children to the settlement ourselves, by the light of the moon where the fields meet the trees. I don't know what else we could possibly do. "I don't think that Ma will be able to come into the forest," I assured the children after we found the perfect hiding place. "It should be safe here."
"Then where is Pa?"
"We have no choice. After warning them once again to stay put and stay quiet, Emily lets the bush fall back into place. The children are completely hidden from view. I memorize the spot in my mind. Burn it in. Do not forget this tree. We mount Blackjack, me in front, Emily behind me, and keep heading deeper in the opposite direction of the prairie. The forest in the mountains was hardly ever quiet, except in the dead of winter, and usually buzzed with the sound of animals and insects that could always be heard in the air. Here, there is no sound. We see a single deer as we ride through, small with alarmed eyes and brown spotted fur, and the second it sees us, it bolts away and disappears in four swift prances. Blackjack picks up his pace without being prompted. I imagine the children lying in the bushes, wrapped around each other and shaking with fright, and my throat closes.
"They're safe for now," Emily says, as if reading my mind. "But we do need to make this quick, Amanda."
After we've ridden for another half mile or so, I halt the horse, and Emily glances all around us. "Didn't you say it was supposed to be straight out from where Zeke usually rode through?" I say with uncertainty. "I don't see anything."
"I don't either,"
Emily says, leaning to the side as if straining to hear.
"Hush."
I quiet myself and turn to watch Emily. She lifts her hair away from her ears and leans even farther.
"Do you hear that?" she murmurs quietly.
I strain my ears.
"No,"
I start to say, but then I do hear something. It's very far off, very faint, a high-pitched tone that sounds exactly like screaming children. It's not coming from behind us, thank goodness. At least there's that.
"What on earth is that?"
I ask Emily. She shushes me once more. Blackjack's ears flick and turn themselves to the left.
"I think it's coming from the east," my sister says slowly. "It sounds like animals or something."
"I guess we should go toward it," I say. "It's our only sign so far. Did Zeke ever mention any animals?"
"No, but it's not as if we told each other the stories of our lives," Emily said.
I turn Blackjack to the left, and we weave through the trunks. There are more logs to maneuver over this way, more boulders and ponds to go around. The screaming becomes louder, and Blackjack begins to shudder and cry out. We only ride for a short time when I see it. The shape of a wide, low cabin, tucked away behind the trees ahead. Emily sees it at the same time as me. Blackjack begins to spook from the sounds of the screaming, growing louder still, and with them the air has grown thick with dread. He rears, threatening to bolt, and I call back for Emily to get down. Once she's off, I lead the horse back a bit until he calms, then secure his reins to a low-hanging branch. "We'll need to leave him here," I say, and hop down to join Emily. "He won't go any farther. We just need to be careful. Remember this spot, all right?" Emily nods slowly. My stomach turns at the feel of the unfamiliar ground beneath my feet.
"All right, sister," I say, and hug Emily in an act of pure nerves. "Let's go."
24. The screams tear over each other, becoming steadily louder as we make our way to the cabin. When we are close enough to smell the smoke coming from the chimney, we begin to duck behind trees. I cannot imagine what I'm about to witness, an animal being slaughtered, children in agony. I've no other idea as to what could be causing such a terrible noise. When we're close to the cabin, a large wooden fence comes into view, big and sturdy, that wraps around the entire back end of the dwelling. The high-pitched shrills are coming from inside. There is no sign of Pa, or Rocky, or Zeke, or Dr. Jacobson anywhere.
"We need to move around," Emily whispers. "We can't see anything from here."
So we dart from tree to tree carefully, quietly, as if playing hide-and-seek on the mountain with the children. My heart aches to return to them. When we've reached the opposite end of the cabin, we cautiously approach the fence, crouching and crawling in the soft, moist soil that is riddled with pebbles and sticks and pine needles so that we would not be visible from inside the house. My sister and I lower our eyes to a gap in the fence and hold our breath. Before I know what's happening, our noses are nearly bitten off by a giant swine, the largest I've ever seen, with a fanged mouth that covers the entirety of the gap in the fence. It cries out in anger when we both get away, a frenzied squeal that sounds just like the many coming from behind it.
"Pigs," Emily sighs in relief. "It's only pigs. I thought that somebody..."
"I know," I say and crawl on my knees to the far corner of the fence for a better look. "So did I." Emily follows, the color drained from her face. I rise a couple of inches, then a couple more, until I am crouching at the top of the fence and can see down into the pen, as well as the cabin behind it. The cabin is very nice, large with a pointed roof, built with double-paned glass windows that Ma would have gone green with envy over. The thought of Ma brings tears to my eyes, but then I see something embedded in the center of the pig pen, bloody and filthy, and covered in mud and pig waste. Hannah's nightgown. And next to it, flattened to almost nothing beneath massive hooves the size of clubs, Pa's hat. A white jawbone sits gleaming in the dirt by the hat, a row of cracked yellow teeth embedded in a line across the top. I know as soon as I see it that it once belonged to Pa. Before I can react, Emily screams. It blends right into the sound of the pigs. I didn't even notice that she was standing, too, peeking over the top of the fence with me, and my hand flies over her face in an attempt to stop her from making any more sound. We sink to our knees behind the fence, both of us gasping for air, and the pigs seem to scream even louder.
"We need to run," I whisper as soon as I can gather myself enough to do so. "We need to run and get the children now."
"How is this happening?" Emily cries, her breath quickening. "What happened to them? I don't understand. What about Zeke?" "I'm sorry." I can hardly hold myself together as we crawl back through the dirt, covering our skirts with mud. The fence shakes as the pigs run into the other side of it. From the forest ahead of us, I can hear Blackjack crying out in panic. "This is all my fault. I'm sorry for everything, Emily. Oh, my God."
"The children," Emily repeats as we reach the end of the fence. "We need to get Joanna and Charles."
It's so dim in the forest that it's hard to tell what time it is or how much light is left out in the prairie. There were clouds rolling in on our way here, I remember, and traveling to Elmwood without the full light of the moon will be extremely difficult. Emily and I prepare to run across the small clearing to the nearest tree large enough to hide behind.
"On the count of three," Emily says and gathers her skirts up around her waist.
I do the same.
"One," I whisper.
"Two." "Three!" Someone behind us yells, someone behind the fence, someone at the back of the cabin. The voice is deep, loud, almost like a growl, and cuts over the squeals of the pigs with ease. "Run, girls! You don't want to be late getting home tonight!" We stand to run. I can't help but look back to see who or what is behind me. It's Dr. Jacobson, and standing beside him is Zeke. At least I think it's Zeke. His face is tinged deep with green, and striped with ugly veins that are so dark they look black. He is grinning through his cracked lips, a grin so wide it could be drunk, and the teeth beneath are broken to pieces. The cracked flesh of his mouth bleeds down, smearing the front of his chin with red, and he waves. His hair sticks out in random patches over his head, the majority of it fallen or pulled from the scalp. Emily gasps. Still beside Zeke is Dr. Jacobson. His glasses are askew, but his usually friendly face is unsmiling, and his bald head is speckled with blood and bits of mud. His eyes are open, but he doesn't appear to be here at all.
"Remarkable child she was, Hannah," he calls out to us,
and his voice sounds as grated and crumbled as Zeke's.
"But I do wish your pa hadn't brought her over here. He spread the infection over the barrier, you see, and already it's changing its ways in the different terrain. Already it has adapted to the spirit of the forest. My son wasn't able to stop it this time, Ezekiel?"
Zeke begins to laugh so hard that he coughs on whatever thickness is clogging his throat. The green of his skin, the rot of it, is sickening. The patches of missing hair and scarlet grin make him unrecognizable, a monster, yet he stands as though he is in control of himself. The evil works differently here than it does on the prairie, I realize with horror. Anything could happen here.
"All that time patrolling the forest line to keep the demons out," Dr. Jacobson continues. "I did it myself until Zeke came of age to handle the shotgun. I thought nothing could get his guard down after hearing about what happened to his grandfather after the Kensington incident."
I knew it. Ma has become possessed, just the same as Jasper Kensington. My heart sinks into my stomach. The doctor sighs.
"I should have known he was lying when he swore the girl wouldn't distract him from his responsibility."
Emily cries out, her eyes brimming with tears. Zeke was trying to protect her.
"Like a fool, I went along with his request to let you all live until things got out of hand. Your pa is the one who made the final mistake, though."
Dr. Jacobson looks into the pen.
"He should have accepted that the baby didn't have a chance after the ant attack. The prairie had claimed that little body, and it started to come alive again just minutes after he arrived. But rest assured, girls, that was not Hannah in there. Oh, no, not at all."
He looks to his son.
"We don't stand a chance, Zeke and I. He's almost gone already. Look at him. There isn't any hope for us now."
"No,"
Emily wails. My heart is in my throat as I try not to look at the tiny nightgown and half-crushed jawbone in the stinking mud of the pen.
"We fed them both to the pigs, you know,"
the doctor calls sadly, and he and Zeke climb up so that they are standing over the squealing animals.
"We thought it might help, but it was too late. The barrier has been crossed. It isn't just the prairie anymore, I'm afraid."
Without another word, both Dr. Jacobson and Zeke spread their arms out and fall silently into the pig pen. I hear them both land in the dirt, loud, solid thunks that spark a frenzied reaction from the swine. Over the ruckus of the screaming animals comes the crunch of snapping bones, the rip of tearing flesh, the popping of snapped cartilage. The Jacobsons are being eaten alive, but neither of them make a sound.
"Run!"
Emily screams and bolts. I follow her as fast as I can. We sprint through the woods toward Blackjack's whimpers, jumping over logs and stones and vines and dips. Finally, we reach the horse. He's frantic, rearing on his back legs and trying to pull away from the branch. Emily unties it with hands shaking so badly I don't think she'll ever get it. Finally, she does, and in an instant we are up and riding north to the prairie, the horse moving with frightened precision and a clear memory of how to get out. Emily tightens her arms around my middle, crying into my back. There's no doubt about it now. Ma is never coming back. All that remains of the Verner family are Emily and me and the children, and our cabin, or the land that the Kensington cabin sits on, has been evil all along. Did Henry know this would happen when he drew the map out for my pa and sent our family into hell? The Jacobson's cabin falls farther and farther away every time I look back, and then I can't see it anymore at all. I lead Blackjack to the tree I burned into my mind, the tree that marks where we hid the children, frantic, crying out their names over and over again. There comes no answer. I nearly leap from the top of the horse, and Emily stays on to keep control of Blackjack and make sure he doesn't bolt. I tear the bush back from the hollowed log, tears streaming down my face. The children are gone. 25.
"We promised we'd protect them," Emily says through her tears. "We've failed them, Amanda, our own brother and sister."
"They're still alive," I insist, frantic as we peer at the prairie cabin from the edge of the forest. "I know it. They have to be. We have to get them.
The sun is low, but still high enough to lend us light for at least some of the ride to Elmwood. If the children are alive and we can manage to harness the ox to the wagon...
Why did we ever leave our mountain?
Emily whispers behind me.
We're all going to die here.
You mustn't talk like that, I scold. What if we just rode close enough to look through the window? I ask, and nudge Blackjack forward through the grass. I can see if they're alive or not, and if we need to bolt, we can.
Let them be alive, I beg. Please. Oh, I can't bear the thought of any more death, Amanda,
Emily says.
But I feel as though it is inevitable.
No, Emily, I argue. Have faith, sister. I will take us away from here, and the children as well. We're about halfway to the cabin when we both hear it, a sliding note of music with the sweet woody sound that can only be made by Pa's fiddle. Someone inside the cabin is playing a flawless version of Come Holy Ghost. And with the high tune blends the voices of Joanna and Charles, high-pitched and shaking, and my arms break out into goose flesh.
Come, Holy Ghost, Creator blessed, and in our souls take up your rest. Come with your grace and heavenly aid to fill the hearts which you have made. O Comforter, to you we cry, O heavenly gift of God Most High, O fount of life and fire of love and sweet anointing from above, you and your sevenfold gifts are known. You, finger of God's hand we own, you, promise of the Father, you, who do the tongue with power imbue.
I told you they're alive,
I cry out, thankful beyond words at the second chance.
I won't let her have them, Emily. We will not fail them again.
Yes, my sister says. I hope you're right, Amanda. The song is nearly through when we break into the front yard of the cabin. Smoke billows from the chimney, and the fiddle plays on without skipping a beat. The only thing that keeps me moving forward is the voices of my siblings. I will do whatever it takes to get them back, I promise myself. That thing is not my ma. I will kill it if I must.
I need you here with me, I say to Emily, and she nods sharply. Can you focus? Are you ready?
Yes, she whispers, and her hands curl into fists.
Let's just get them and get out of here.
Without a word, my sister and I stalk to the front door, ready to scream at the children to run to us, and I put my hand on the doorknob.
Come in, calls Ma's voice, twisted into something different before I even turn the knob.
I push the door open, ready for anything. Wrong. I am only vaguely aware that the brand new hardwood floor is completely ruined with blood. It puddles in large pools all around, not leaving a corner untouched. It's splattered over the mattresses, the newly shaved walls, and drips over the front of Ma's naked body as she sits rocking in her chair. She's wearing the grizzly bear rug over herself like a coat, and jerkily plays Pa's fiddle with perfect precision. In the center of the floor is the head of Peter, the ox.
Help us, Amanda!
Joanna cries from the back corner where she sits with Charles in her arms.
She's going to eat us!
The fiddle music stops mid-note. I dash to the side of the door where Pa's hunting knife is lying bloodied on the floor. The demon sets the fiddle down gently and stands to face us.
Do you have it in you, girl? It says to me through my ma's mouth. Do you have what it takes to kill your ma? She blamed you for last winter, you know. She was humiliated by the weakness of your mind after she fought so hard, for so long, to keep this heart beating.
Be quiet! Emily yells at the demon. It's lying, Amanda. Of course it's lying. It's toying with you. Don't be distracted now.
I squeeze my fist around the warm, slippery handle of the knife even harder to try and get my hand to stop shaking. Do I even have a chance against this thing? If I move for it, will it catch my wrist in its hand, break my arm from the socket, bake my insides into a pie?
Distractions, Ma hisses. Amanda Verner loves distractions. Oh, yes. She'll get them however she can. By a clawed creature in the woods, by a postboy writhing on the forest floor, by pretending that she was capable of protecting poor little Hannah.
Don't you speak her name!
I step toward the demon, and the children scream. It doesn't move a muscle. In fact, it looks amused, still naked and covered in blood and cloaked with the grizzly bear rug.
Do something!
My mind screams, and I throw a weak slice with the blade across the creature's forearm.
My Ma's skin opens, but only just a little. It's too shallow a cut to inflict any real damage.
Oh, Hannah, the demon sings, and I am momentarily distracted by the sudden movement on the ground.
The ants have returned. They cover my boots, try to make their way up my legs, frenzied, fast, faster even than the ones that got my baby sister. I back away in time to avoid them for the most part, and just as I feel the first bite on my thigh, I hear the children scream. The ants are making their way for Joanna and Charles, who stand and back up into the corner of the cabin. Move across the room, I yell, not taking my eyes from the demon, holding the knife up once again. I won't let it come after you. Get away from the ants. The children run over the frantic layer of prairie ants, their boots making slick, crunching noises as they make their way to Emily.
Oh, you won't you?
The demon steps forward and grabs my throat. I feel my windpipe being crushed beneath the tremendous strength of my Ma's arm as I'm lifted completely off the ground. An ant bite comes alive with pain on my stomach, then my hip, then my thigh again.
I knew from the first moment I sensed you on my earth that you were completely pathetic.
I've ruined everything, I think as my vision begins to blur. I've made my last mistake. Suddenly we're knocked off balance, and the creature drops me to the floor. I move away from the ants, gasping for air, and realize that Emily has knocked the demon over. My sister sits on her knees, cradling the side of her head with her hands. The demon stands, and the grisly rug falls off. Most of the hair from my Ma's head has been torn out, and some of the raw patches on her scalp are shining with blood and pus.
I will kill you now, the demon spits at my sister, truly angry for the first time. No more toying.
No.
Come and give your Ma a kiss.
It snarls and lunges for Emily. She screams. Before I know what I'm doing, I run up to the thing and sunk the hunting blade deep into its temple. It blinks, blabbering nonsense, and stumbles backward. The ants stop moving, stop biting, start receding through the cracks and holes on the ground they came from. Emily makes a dash for the front door with the children. Come on, sister, she cries. Come on! The demon snarls and throws Ma's hand at me, weakly.
Sinner,
it says, and lets out a grated giggle.
You'll always be a...
With a guttural cry, I lower my shoulder and charge the abomination. We collide, and I shove it backward into the mouth of the roaring fireplace. The demon is still screaming by the time we harness Blackjack up to the wagon and load the children inside. The smoky smell of roasting meat fills the air, and I become sick into the grass. By the time we are heading steadily away from the cabin by the light of the late afternoon sun, the children sleeping on top of one another, and Emily at my side on the bench, the screams have finally died away like a dissolving nightmare. 26. Elmwood is so far away, Emily says in a low voice as the wagon bumps through the prairie. The sun is falling lower and lower with every minute, and neither of us have any idea of what we should do. I don't quite know how I feel about going there instead of back to the mountain. It's getting late, and the light of the moon is going to be blocked by those clouds. We'd have to camp. We will have to camp anyway, for Blackjack. I throw a glance behind my shoulder into the back of the wagon. Joanna and Charles are sleeping, their arms wrapped around each other, their faces set in frowns even in slumber. At least they are alive. But either way, sister, we are going to need supplies. The only thing we have is the barrel of water that Pa filled the afternoon before Hannah got attacked. Without all the added weight of the family's belongings, the mostly empty wagon is able to glide through the tall grasses much more quickly than on the way here. I'd like to get as far away as possible before we are forced to stop to let the horse rest. The closer we can get to Elmwood, to other people and supplies and help, the better. But I know from Pa's experience that the trip could potentially take us a full day's worth of time, since we aren't completely sure where it is. I've just thought of something, Emily says and straightens her back. Do you remember that cabin we passed on the way into the Kensington place, with the children waving to us from the fence? I can't believe I'd forgotten. There had been a cabin on the way here, somewhere far away from the tree line, and at the time we'd all been so upset to discover that it was occupied. Perhaps we could make our way there to get help, I say, Do you think they'd give us supplies?
It's worth a try, Emily says. At the very least, it's on the way to the mountain.
And so we have a plan. We ride for a long time in silence, and I wonder if Emily's mind is having just as hard of a time digesting all of this as mine is. I am plagued by flashbacks of the earlier days on the prairie, of discovering the ruined cabin, of hearing an infant crying in the night, of feeling the hand on my wrist, of losing my baby. That wasn't me who collected your baby's slime into my earth. The demon's words repeated in my head, just as unwaveringly cruel as they were the first time I heard them back at the cabin. Oh no, dearie. That was God. I prayed for no more baby. Sinner. I prayed for no more Hannah. You already have a devil in you, girl.
Stop the wagon, I say, suddenly unable to sit still. You need to leave me here. You need to go on without me.
What? Emily looks at me in shock, the corners of her mouth beginning to pull back in panic.
What are you talking about, sister?
I'm evil, I say, and I break out into a cold sweat. The demon in the woods has been inside of me all along. Don't you remember what that thing inside of Ma said to me? It couldn't get in, Emily.
It couldn't get in because you wouldn't let it in, Emily emphasizes, refusing to slow Blackjack down, because you're an especially strong person.
If you only knew how weak I am, I burst, and Joanna startles awake for a moment before falling back into uneasy snores.
If you only knew what thoughts have run through my head, Emily. If you only knew how despicable, how disgustingly, how positively.
What are you saying? Emily cuts me off. It doesn't matter what you think, sister. It matters what you do. If we were to be damned for every thought that ran through our minds, we'd all be hellbound. What matters is who you are.
And who am I, Emily? I have no more tears to shed. I only feel dread inside.
You are stronger than you think you are, Emily says. You are not your thoughts. The only devil inside of you is the one you created yourself.
I say nothing. Is it possible that she's right?
I refuse to leave you behind, she continues. I refuse to let you give up on yourself again. Have you forgotten about what you did just now? You stabbed the demon. You pushed it into the fire, even though you knew you could have died doing so.
I had to, though. I shudder at the memory of Ma's face as it twisted in pain in reaction to the knife and the flames. I had to protect you and the children.
And there it is, Emily says. That is who you are. You are someone who would risk your life to protect the people that you love. You are someone who makes mistakes, just like everybody else.
The sky deepens to a soft purple red as the sun finally sinks into the horizon. Ever since the mountain, I have felt an unspoken gap between Emily and me, a total lack of understanding, a loss of sisterhood that I feared could never be regained. And now, as I look into the face of my younger sister, who should have been my older sister, I realize that it was I, once again, who has misunderstood. She will always be here for me, and I for her. That's the most important thing, now that our Ma and Pa and Hannah have been taken away from us. The pain of it all is deeper than I could have ever imagined, but we are not alone. We must take care of each other now, always, and the children as well.
Thank you, Emily, I say, and move over enough to wrap her in a hug. Despite all we've been through and how truly exhausted she looks, my sister smiles at the embrace and leans into it.
I love you.
And I you.
That's when we see it at the same time. The cabin we passed on the way to finding our new homestead. It lies just ahead in a spot that is miles from the tree line.
That's it, Emily says. I'm sure of it. Oh, I hope they'll give us supplies. I'm not sure if our foraging skills from the mountains will be of much use here, at least until we get farther away from the flatlands.
She quickly flicks the reins up, then down, and Blackjack speeds up a little at the sight of a sure destination.
Let's not wake the children, I say when we're close. They need all the rest they can possibly get.
Are we going to tell the owners of the cabin what happened? Emily asks as the wagon draws nearer. Her mouth pulls to the side.
If we do, there's a very good chance they'll turn us away out of fright. Agreed, I say. All we need to reveal is that we've lost our Ma and Pa and need any help they can offer. If they ask, say it was a sickness. Emily's eyes grow misty.
It was sick, all right.
As we get closer to the cabin, we are greeted with a strange sight. Just as there were when we passed by the first time, there are three small children sitting on the fence outside of the house, waving to us. Even after we return the gesture, the waving doesn't stop.
Is this striking you as peculiar?
Emily asks as she leans forward and squints at the children. Kind of an odd time to be playing outside, in the beginnings of the night. And why won't they stop waving? My stomach sinks more with every rotation of the wagon wheel. The children still have not stopped waving. The outlines of their bodies look increasingly funny as we draw nearer, out of proportion, strangely tall but with tiny heads. Don't stop the horse when we're near, I instruct. Let me try to call out to them from the wagon first. But as soon as we're close enough to make out the truth, Emily jolts the reins and makes Blackjack speed away from the cabin. For each of the three children, who sat waving to us from atop the fence with such enthusiasm, aren't actually children at all. Nor are they sitting on the fence like we thought. They're scarecrows, posted behind the fence, all three in a perfectly straight row. Henry told me about these once, I realize as I stifle the urge to vomit. Did he know they were real when he told me the story? Did he know exactly where he was sending us that day he recommended the prairie to Pa? I vow to ask him myself one day. For instead of having straw-filled burlap sacks for heads, these scarecrows have been given real heads, sewn on at the neck with thick black cord, heads that once belonged to children. They don't stop waving, their gloved hands floating back and forth in hurried excitement. In their free hands are pieces of someone, an arm, a foot, a shining length of intestine. Their mouths are completely smeared with red. We don't try to find Elmwood. As far as we know, it sits right on the prairie and probably isn't safe anymore, if it ever was. So we go to the only place we know, the only place that could possibly hold a future for us. We go home. The journey is much shorter than the one we took to get here, but the lack of supplies makes it twice as difficult to survive. We all do, but by the time we make it to the foot of the mountain, our clothes are much bigger on us than before, and we can hardly walk on our own. But we do. We abandon the wagon, and the children ride on Blackjack as Emily and I lead him up, up, up the path that goes to the clouds, to our cabin, to our home. We gorge on wild strawberries and water from the creeks. We refuse to give up. And when our cabin finally comes into view, just as tiny as when we left it, but now with more than enough space to hold our entire family, we all burst into tears. The air is frigid, and the first flakes of winter begin to fall as we huddle together inside the empty cabin. I tell the children that tomorrow we will make the last stretch to the settlement on the other side of the mountain, and then all of this will finally be over. They shiver as they fall asleep. I wonder if Henry will be there tomorrow. I wonder if he'll ask about our baby. I wonder if I'll be able to resist killing him for suggesting the prairie to my Pa. Emily's breathing becomes rhythmic, and my eyelids flutter down, heavy and sleepy. I yawn. But then there is a sound that makes me snap more awake than I've ever been in my life, something outside the cabin, growing louder as it approaches, and my heart feels as though it may collapse. It is the sound of Pa's fiddle, warped and thin and drastically out of tune, somewhere out there in the dark woods. Emily and the children sleep as soundly as ever. The fiddle is playing, Come Holy Ghost.
This is Georgina Marie. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Daughters Unto Devils by Amy Lukovics. This program was produced by John Marshall Media. Executive producer, Suzanne Mitchell. Text copyright 2015 by Amy Lukovics. Production copyright 2016 by Harlequin Enterprises Limited. Used under license with Harlequin Books S.A. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.